Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to another Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Claw, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports' Michael Gannon and Australian journalist, broadcaster, Francis Leach. Francis, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Daniel. Hey, Michael. It's great to be on the Celtic podcast. Love it.
What time is it where you are?
I'm in Canberra, in the nation's capital tonight. Getting on towards 10 p.m. on a Monday evening. So living in the upside down compared to you guys, which means watching Celtic games, watching Scottish Premiership football and European football is a consuming and sleep depriving thing. But when a team like Celtic are playing the way they are, that trademark Ange Postecoglou style, it makes up for it, the early starts and the nights.
Well, as I say, we definitely appreciate you joining us. I know that you joined us on the Record Celtic podcast, I think it was back in June, so we're delighted to have you back. Obviously, Ange Postecoglou is someone that I think you've worked with on and off for the sort of last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, I've known Ange for a long time. Australian football is a very diverse and dynamic community, but it's also pretty small. So we kind of get to know it pretty well over the journey, and in that sense, punch very much above our weight in terms of the level of talent we produce, and both as players now as coaches as well. And so I've known Ange and followed his career from his times at South Melbourne, a very young coach there, where he led South Melbourne, the club, his childhood club, to the National Premier League of Australia back then, when we were producing some really fine footballers. So that league was part-time footballers, but a very high standard. And then, of course, through his career, through the A-League and beyond as the national coach as well, and the dynamic change he brought to the Socceroos in his tenure there, and the extraordinary football that he had both Brisbane Roar and the Melbourne Victory playing, and his success in Japan as well. None of this has been a surprise to me, Daniel. I think I told you at the time what Ange was about and what he can bring to a football club given the opportunity. And he's still got a long way to go. He'll be the first to admit that this is only just the start of his mission with Celtic. But you know the trademark, all the things I talked about, what he would demand from his players, the mindset that he requires from his players and his team, the buy-in he requires, and the passion he expects them to play. That's all been evident in what has been, a fantastic first half of the season for him. And, of course, the cup win as well. So he's won his first trophy there too, which is marked for an Australian in football, and I believe there'll be more of it.
Mick, it's been a huge week for Ange Postecoglou. Obviously, it's been a defining week in many ways for his time at Celtic.
It has been, yeah. I wanted to ask Francis. Francis, how would you describe Ange's relationship with the media in Australia? I think over here there's a bit of a common myth over here that Ange doesn't like us guys in the media, which I think is actually not the case, because I think he gets on quite well with us. I think he enjoys a bit of to and fro with us, and the relationship has been really good, I think. But what was it like back home in Australia with him?
Oh, look, he's a very forthright character. He's also very funny in a very dry kind of way. And he does suffer fools, and we've seen that many times. I think there was that famous press conference that became a bit of a meme here in Australia when Celtic were about to play by Leverkusen in the Europa Cup tie. It was a great game. I did watch that game, the second leg of the game. And somebody was asking him about ticket allocations for the League Cup final at Sanders Park on the day of this game. And he just said, mate, we're about to play a big European tie, and you're asking about ticket allocations? That was classic Ange. So, he gave him a bit of a whack, but he also gave him a bit of a cuddle as well. That's the way he is. What he has learned from his time in Australia, I guess something that maybe Michael and Daddy, you don't understand, is that He's always been, this is why I think he and I got on so well, because we both had this in our different roles. Ange has always been a fierce advocate and promoter and evangelist for the joy of football. And in Australia, as a top sports person and top coach, all the other with Australian rules football and rugby league, football or soccer is here at times as well, has always felt like the child. And football and Socceroos and the quality of football we produce has always been looked down upon, and even at times with suspicion, because the game is traditionally here, for at least in the post-World War II period, been a game has been driven by first-generation migrants to this country. You look at that 2006 Socceroos team that did so well at the World Cup in Germany, and subsequent Socceroos teams that have competed at World Cup finals around the world. The names will tell you that. This is a game that's been built on the richness of our ethnic diversity and cultures that come with it. And it's always been an outsider's game. And he's carried that burden fiercely, that he always thought that the football should be treated with more respect, and he's going to fight and stand his ground. Even when the Socceroos are doing well, he would still get very, very pissed off with things like the fact that they would sometimes have to play in stadiums that weren't quite ready, or on pitches that of a hybrid the ECG or other venues not fitting the national team. So always fighting against the marginalisation of the game. So that's where he comes from. And so he's not one to suffer fools, and he's learning how to carry the fight to people. He means, look, if you're a football person and you know what you're talking about and you're respectful, you've got no problem. You've got no problem. And he'll talk football with you all day long about any football you want to talk about. Not there to deal with idiots, and he won't suck fools. I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, I think that is fair enough. I think that's the impression we're getting also. I think he'll talk all day about things.
He's funny.
He is. I must admit, Francis, though, that my first impression in pre-season, I wasn't there for his unveiling at Celtic. I was away. But I came back, and I went to a pre-season training camp down in Cardiff in Wales with him. And my first meeting with him, and the first interview, I said to him, how is some player's injury? And he says, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, mate. And I said, okay. I said, how about, have you talked about budgets? And he goes, I'm not an accountant, mate. I said, all right. I said, how do you think they're going to get on? He goes, I'm not psychic, mate. I thought, oh no, this is going to be tough. But I must admit, from that point onwards, I don't know if he was just testing us out, but but from that point onward, he's been really great. Listen, he keeps his cards close to his chest when it comes to matters like signings and injuries. Things he wants to keep quiet, he'll keep quiet about. But if you ask about football in general and the kind of experience of it and his history, listen, us guys in the written media know about his past. We've researched him quite intensively from the summer. So we know about his history back to his playing days. But when you ask about these things, he's very passionate. He talks about his father's influence. He's been really interesting. I think he's been a breath of fresh air for journalism, Scotland, because we don't just like the kind of nuts and bolts. We like the whole story. We like the colour. We like the backstory. We like all the kind of things that build up the bigger picture of a personality. And he's brought that, and we know him a lot better now. And I think he's been a great addition to Scottish football. He's been brilliant.
Yeah, I think part of what you mentioned there at the start was I think he would have known coming into the job how big it was. And Ange's... And he's got a fairly good radar for that. He's got good people around him too. He would have known there was a lot of scepticism about whether he was up to the job. And that scepticism, particularly in the sort of rough and tumble and robust nature of Scottish football, was he tough enough to cope with the criticism? Can he deal with a hostile media? How's he going to cope? Low torches applied, how's he going to go? So in typical Ange, he would have got on the front foot and she gave a little bit back first. To let you know that he can handle himself.
Now,
I think that's probably part of it too.
Yeah. No, but it's all good fun. It's all good knockabout fun. But I don't think the media's too hostile up here, but we have a bit of fun now and again. But no, he seems to enjoy it as well.
Since we last did a Celtic podcast, obviously, as I say, one of the defining results in Ange's reign so far, a thumping 3-0 win over Rangers. Obviously, his first win over Rangers. But, Francis, how was that received in Australia?
Yeah, it was news here, definitely. See, Ange and I were panelists on a long-running television program in Australia called Offsiders, which is a sports program on the ABC, the BBC's equivalent here in Australia. And whenever Ange has a win on Offsiders, it always pops up on there, and they spoke about it again on Sunday. So, you know, he's making huge waves in terms of establishing his reputation overseas, as it was when he won the J-League as well. So, yeah, it certainly was big news. Look, I'll be honest, that fixture is big news in Australia. Anyway, for football fans, you know, the Eltham Derby is big news. So we always keep an eye across it. But for those of us that have, Celtic in our hearts as well, it was exciting the way that they played. We saw the brand of football that he has brought to the club. It reminded me, I know, once again, some of us might stop at this because they haven't seen the A-League at its best, but his Brisbane Roar teams, when they went on that remarkable dual premier title run where they won, I think, 39 games and went 39 games unbeaten, they just tore teams apart in the first half of every game they played. They just, you know, just send his team out there to lay it down and put, you know, both on the scoreboard, but also put their position under such extreme pressure that, you know, they eat away at their self-belief. And that's what we saw from performance. And they're backing it up again against Motherwell on the weekend, which is, you know, that's the banana skin everyone thought was it, off the Derby win to Motherwell and get a result again in a short space of time. And if anything, it was even more impressive in the first half. So it's certainly making huge waves. You know, it's sort of raised the profile of Scottish football again here in Australia. We've always had a strong link with Scottish football, as you probably know. And, of course, watching Tommy play so well, after this point of a sort of very stuttering Socceroos World Cup qualification performance, which looks like he's going to maybe see the Socceroos miss the World Cup finals for the first time since 2006, for him to come back into that team and play so very well and score those goals was really exciting to watch. So, well, we've always known that Tom is a super player. He's, after being a professional footballer, is really interesting as well. He didn't really play traditional 11-a-side football and come through the National Premier League Elite Academies. He was a futsal player that got spotted as a talent, you know, outside the traditional pathways. You know, that's obviously reflected in the way that cross control has always been so exquisite. And now he's developing into the leader and the player that we'd always hoped he would. And he's injury-free. Of course, Simon Australia had any number of injuries, probably had the same problem at Celtic. But, you know, getting a good run of games, being one of the leaders in this team now and scoring goals. And, you know, when he's up and going, he's such a class player. He's also doing that, watching the games. You know, Ange only ever had access to Tom briefly in Socceroos camp. So I don't think he's ever been able to get the very best out of him in terms of all the work he needs to do to meet the Postecoglou standard of being, you know, one team, one mind player, and doing all the defensive work and doing the pressing, all the stuff that's required if you're going to be a long-term member of a Postecoglou team. It's the only way to stay in that team. We're seeing him do that now. He's got the physical capacity to do it now, and we're seeing him do it on a regular basis. And as you know from watching these teams, that's when these players really start to generate that self-belief within the group itself. That if they're all doing the work for each other, then the results will take care of themselves. And that's all in Ange's, you know, that's the foundation of his philosophy.
Mick, see just on Tom Rogic, obviously a brilliant performance from him at Fir Park yesterday. I'm a little bit surprised that Celtic haven't had more kind of serious interest in him over the last couple of years. He's such an elegant, kind of explosive player. He's brilliant. Mm.
Yeah, but remember, it's only last summer when it looked like Tom was going to be kind of sliding away quietly to the Middle East. Which is, listen, I'm sure it's a good level of football, but it's maybe not the elite level you think that a guy at 28 years old and his prime would be going to. And it looked like a kind of sad end to his time at Celtic because he's been a great player at times through the years. Had his problems with injury, obviously, as Francis mentioned. But the transformation this season under Ange Postecoglou has been incredible because this is a guy who looked like he was heading towards, listen, let's be honest, kind of almost semi-retirement. Because he was maybe playing 15, 20 games a season in the last couple of years. When he played, he always looked good, but wasn't playing enough. I know there was two years ago, there was interest in Russia, big money. I think we're talking about £15 million. But since then, it went all quiet. But now, people are looking at his contract with 18 months to go and thinking, get him nailed down because this guy, he's got everything. He's got the physique. He's got the touch. He's got the ability to create and score goals. The one thing we had concerns about was his engine, because famously during his time at Celtic, you get to the hour mark and it'd be right, that's time up for him. I think looking back, I done it maybe three or four years ago. I looked at his stats, and in four seasons, I think he played 90 minutes about 10 times, which is not an awful lot really for a professional. So it looked to me, it looked almost like the kind of the perfect five-a-side player with great touch and vision and feet, but then after an hour the hooter goes and it's time to go home. Whereas this season, he's playing 90 minutes regularly. I mean, actually on Sunday, I mean, he'd scored two, had an absolutely spectacular performance, had probably under eight to be swagging around, but he was chasing back 60, 70 yards. I've never seen Tom Rogic running 70 yards at any point in time, unless he's got a ball at his feet. So I don't know what Ange has done to put a rocket up him, but it seems to be working a treat, because he is the player that everyone thought he could become this season. And he's now worth his weight in gold. So fair play to the manager. He's getting the best out of him this season. And this is the kind of level he got probably the first season under Brendan Rodgers, was something similar. He's back at that level. And if anything else, he's back at that level, but with added fitness. Mm-hmm. So it's good for Celtic and for the player.
There's actually, Francis, there's several players in the current Celtic squad that I think kind of fall into the bracket that Mick's talking about. So Rodgick does look transformed in the way that he plays. But there's also people like Tony Ralston, who look like he was definitely surplus to requirements, transformed this season, absolutely fantastic. Greg Taylor's another one that didn't quite convince, but now looks like a brilliant player. I mean, is this something that Ange has done throughout his career? Regularly improved players?
Yeah, look, I think what Ange has done is, there's a great story story that from his days at Brisbane Roar. So there was a young German player by the name of Thomas Breuss. She was coming through the German academies. This is in the around 2008, 2009, around that period of time. And he was, he was a junior with a team, many of the players that went on to win the 2014 World Cup. But he lost his way and he sort of ended up on the periphery of European football. And Ange was then out scouting and found him. And he knew that he spotted all the elements that he thought that would be necessary for Thomas to be a really fine footballer. And Breuss came to Brisbane because Ange convinced him to come. But Thomas, who I got to know over the journey, at his own admission, was a part-time footballer in his heart. Like he's an intelligent man who was interested in music and literature and whatnot, and he loved playing football, but he wasn't quite sure that he wanted to be a professional footballer. Under Ange, the penny finally dropped for him about the joy that he could get from the game, similar to any book that he would read or any music that he would listen to, if he just gave himself over to the game in its totality when he's playing. And that means doing the hard work. That means, Thomas is a gifted attacking midfield, scored tons of goals for Brisbane, won the A-League Player of the Year a couple of times. Beautiful to watch. And it was, he said, the penny dropped when I started training for Ange. What I should be looking for is the joy in the game that I can find, and the way that I need to do that is to do is every time I'm out there, give everything that I've got. And Thomas ended up having, it was a career in Australia. It didn't become the biggest international superstar, but he'll be remembered here as probably one of the finest players that ever played in the A-League. And he ended up staying here, and his life has become very, very happy because Ange finally got him to understand what the game could offer him personally if he was prepared to commit to the work and his teammates. And that's what he gets out of players. You can coach talent, and good coaches can coach talent, but great coaches coach mindset. And what I mean by that is that you can coach, supremely gifted kid to become a top line footballer, but there's no guarantee without the mindset they're actually going to succeed. But you can, at any level, if you can coach mindset and get people to understand what the game offers them and what it demands of them to get the best out of themselves, you've got half a chance. And that's what he does with players. And that's why the players that you mentioned, some of them don't get it, and some of them will fall by the wayside, and some of them will be let go, and he'll let them go quickly and move on. But the ones that get it, there will be different people and different players after the time of Ange.
Mick, it's like Francis says, it does look like a mindset thing because, he's came here himself, Ange Postecoglou, without any backroom staff. a Celtic team that may be one of the biggest rebuilds in Celtic history. And over the last week or so, you know, they forced Rangers into making three half-time subs, Motherwell into making three half-time subs. It looks like they're really hitting their peak now, Celtic, and just suffocating teams almost.
Yeah, they're really on their stride right now. I mean, it's been a bumpy ride at times to get to this stage, but he's now got a lot of players coming back from injuries, and you can see the squad that he's built. I mean, he brought in a lot of players, but his strike rate in the transfer market has been pretty incredible. And I think most managers, some signs are going to be hit and miss. I mean, if you sign 10 players, you might get three or four that are first team long-term players. I think Ange signed 17 players. A couple of them were teed up before he came in. But he's pretty much brought in 9-10 new first-team players that have hit the ground pretty much running. But you're now starting to see them all. They're all bedded in now. They're all settled. You see the defence now is much more solid. For all the attacking football we talk about, they've got the best defence in the league. It's kind of quietly crept up on people that they stopped losing goals. In the league, I mean, I know it's the first half of the season is a bit harum scarum, especially in Europe. But that for all attacking flair, it's built on a solid foundation as well. So it's no mean feat. I didn't think it was possible to really compete this year for the title. I thought year one was going to be rebuilding, maybe provide a race, and then look for year two. That still might be the case. It still might be that they don't quite make it over the line this year. Because I don't think you should write off Rangers quite yet, despite being hammered last week. So it might be they come a little bit short in year one, but they've put themselves in a position around February. They're on top of the table, so it's game on. And if they can go and finish the job off and win the league this year, it'd be an incredible achievement this year, considering where they were in the summer, needing an entire new team. That's never been, not in my lifetime, that's never been the case. I mean, I think Martin Neal's first season, when he came in, I think that was a total rebuild. It wasn't, because they had Henrik Larsson, they had Paul Lambert, they had Alan Stubbs, Tom Boy, Jackie McNamara. All these guys were already in the building. A solid core of a team, including Henrik Larsson, one of the best players in Europe. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a total build. I just had to completely come in. And apart from Tom Rogic, Callum McGregor, James Forrest, who's been injured a lot this season, it's been pretty much a full new team. I mean, was it nine players who started against Rangers last week were in this season?
Yeah.
Which is a huge turnover. For any club, let alone a club like Celtic. So to get to this stage and be in the running and be in with a great shout and maybe even be the favourites now to win the title is a pretty big achievement. But let's just see now if they can finish it off.
Francis, one other thing that I wanted to kind of draw attention to was that Ange Postecoglou won Manager of the Month for January in the Premiership. And going back to the kind of mindset point you made, he went out of his way to make sure that Gavin Strachan was in the picture with him, holding the award. He seems to have, as I say, he came without any of his own staff, but he's almost galvanised the backroom team as well. It's pretty incredible because, I don't know if you're aware, Francis, but Gavin Strachan, John Kennedy, even Steve McManus, I think I'm right in saying, Mick, they all took their fair share of criticism last season. A lot of Celtic fans didn't want them at the club. Now, all of a sudden, Ange's got them in the trophy pictures and kind of getting them to take the credit along with him.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have been aware of the level of vitriol that was directed at those guys and the level of frustration and disappointment the way that last season turned out. And so he would have made sure that they very much part his team and that he shares this, whatever comes his way. And the really smart managers know how to make that connection with fans because, you know, the good times will come and you can enjoy them. We all know the best. Just around the corner, and you're going to need some capital with the fans when it gets tough, as long as they still believe in your plan and a footballing philosophy that they can buy into. So, you know, and we've seen that with Ange, and, you know, he's committed himself fully, and he's a student of the game. Before I took that, exactly the history of the club and what it means to people, he would have known that. He was from the track because there's tens of thousands of Celtic fans here, and he knows the history of Scottish football. We've had more than enough expat Scots over the journey. Some of our finest socceroos have been people who come from Scotland and made their life in Australia. So he would have been aware of what was at stake and what means. And you know, he's, you know, and he's not one to make the limit all his own. In fact, he's often very reluctant to take that moment. I've only ever seen him really, really bask in a moment fully like that. And that was the night that Australia's Asian Cup against South Korea. I was calling that game on the radio that night. And, having known Ange for a very long time, I could see his dad was there that night too. So that's when I fully saw the only time I've ever seen really let himself fully go into the moment and just celebrate like it was party like it was 1999, and rightfully so. It was a great night, but yeah, he would have made sure that those guys made it known to everyone that they're his guys now, and that's part of the plan. We go as one, we win as one, we lose one, and everything happens as one.
Mac, do you think that people like Gavin Strachan, John Kennedy deserve a bit of praise along with Ange this season? Because, they took enough stick last season when things weren't going well. Now that things are flying, they deserve a bit of the spotlight too.
No, I think they do. I think they obviously bought into the manager's ethos, which helped. Because I think it was a big risk for Ange to go with the retaining coaching staff. Because, listen, he's came in from a long way away and he doesn't know the team personally. And when it gets bumpy, if people are already on the books at the club, we all know that the people have got contacts up the stairs and boardrooms and all that stuff. And sometimes managers are kind of a bit paranoid that they think people are after their jobs and all that stuff. I'm not saying that's the case. Celtics, I know some of the guys on that coach staff, and they're good guys. I don't think they are the kind of guys to do that. But it was a risk for him. He didn't know that. He doesn't know that these guys aren't going to be whispering behind his back if things don't go right early on. So it was a bit of a gamble. So he's put a bit of faith into them, but I think they've also bought into his plans and they're helping him implement them. So it seems to be working. It's working, obviously. But there was a gamble at the start for him. But they do deserve a lot of credit for getting on board and helping his vision come to fruition.
We should say, Mick, that obviously this coming week, another big game for Celtic, obviously at Pittodrie. Just before we come on air, I was saying to you that obviously, on the paper, it looks like a tricky game. But Celtic have actually got a really good record at Pittodrie, and the way they're playing at the minute, and obviously factoring in Aberdeen struggling for form, you'd really fancy them to get 3 points there.
Yeah, Aberdeen is one of these fixtures for Celtic that looks difficult on paper, but when you look at the stats through the years, they've got a really good record up there. And ask Aberdeen fans what they think about Celtic going to Pittodrie. It's not quite a game to look forward to. I think Aberdeen are a strange team to put a finger on just now. The accusation you level at them is they only raise their game for the Old Firm. Whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. They got a good result against Rangers, obviously, the other week, so they have got it in them. But they haven't been great this season, been very inconsistent. So you'd fancy Celtic, if they can turn the pressure on quite early, as they do, you could get a result there. But I think this could be another one of those games where they have to go and see it out and bide their time. So I think Aberdeen under a lot of pressure now after they lost at the weekend. So they'll need to come out biting, fighting and scratching. So I think it might be a slightly more tough game than they've had against Rangers and Motherwell. Mm-hmm. But I thought that would be the case at Motherwell. I thought Motherwell would be one of those kind of games because Motherwell are a decent side, especially at home.
Me too.
And they blew them away. So there's every chance they could do it again at Aberdeen. But it does look like one of those sticky games that they have to get done. If they get a result and they move on, it'd be fantastic for them.
Francis, as is obviously going to be inevitable, with the things that Ange Postecoglou is doing at Celtic, it's getting a lot of attention, not just in Australia, but obviously all across Europe. I don't know how to phrase this, actually. Do you think his ambitions will stretch beyond Celtic in Europe? Will he want to go to the English Premier League, say, or somewhere else in Europe?
Oh, look, yeah, I'd imagine that if he gets an opportunity, he will take it. Yeah, but not until he's completed the work that he thinks he needs to do with Celtic, and that's to win the title and to re-establish the club at the summit of Scottish football. And I think what he would love to do, and I haven't spoken about this, but I think he'd love to coach Celtic into a Champions League spot. And take and to take this club back to the Champions League and to perform well there. I mean, that for him would be part of the mission that he set himself. Look, he you know, I can't speak for Ange, but knowing him, he's got no limits on his self-belief that he can compete with the best. And that's all he always told his players. I mean, I know I go back to the experiences that he's had previously with the in his Australian footballing life, but you know, I interviewed him extensively before the 2014 World Cup in Brazil, because he'd only just taken over from that job just a couple of months out from Australia going to the World Cup after some disastrous results. And he took a squad of predominantly A-League players. It didn't have any star power at all. Didn't have any star power other than Tim Cahill. Tim Cahill was a standout player in that squad. And there was, you know, a few other, Aaron Moy was emerging and a few others, but no one of real high, top level, playing in top level leagues around the world. And, you know, he just convinced these players that they can compete with the best. And he said, you know, part of our shaking off that mentality that we need to be subservient to these other teams or other clubs or other players because of where we come from. That's not the case. And so, you know, throwing the life out of the Dutch in a game in Porto Alegre, you know, took on the Chileans as well in Cuiabá. Well, he played some really, really good football with some, you know, fairly modestly talented players. And, you know, he stood toe-to-toe with the best managers in the world and considers himself capable of being amongst them, as he does consider his players. So, knowing Ange also, I'd imagine it is his ambition to be an Australian coach coaching one of the world's biggest clubs at some point if he can, because he's still an ambassador for the game, and I think he would see that as the ultimate vindication of what the Australian game has been able to give him as well as a platform to do that and to build a road to that sort of opportunity for others that might come behind him. But that's all ahead of us. I mean, who knows? He could have a horrible run of injuries and find himself in a deep hole. Not wishing anyone bad luck, but football can change so very quickly. He could find the second half of the season really tough, and the idea of Ange winning a European trophy will seem a bit frivolous at this particular point on his journey. But, his trajectory has been up for a while now. He's made some brave decisions along the way, like when he decided not to take the Socceroos to Russia 2018, even though he just qualified. He walked away from that because he thought, the team and the culture of Australian football at that point wasn't going to meet the sort of philosophical standards of the way he wanted to play the game and the way you're seeing now, the sort of attacking football. We sort of shrunk back into ourselves and we're hoping to eke out modest results to get through. He never wants his team to play that way. He's never going to play for a draw. I think you've noticed that already. So they weren't people didn't want the sort of football that he was insisting that be the trademark of Australian football, that it represented Australian character, that we don't take a step back, that we take the game to the opposition, that we never stop. And you've seen that famous training video where he says, we just don't stop. If the opposition want to stop, fine, let them, but we'll keep going. If people aren't prepared to commit to that, he'll move on. So, and it gets results. It's got results wherever he's gone. So in his long-term plan, in his heart of hearts, I think he wants to be the very best manager he can be. And if that means at some point, you know, taking on one of the really, truly superpower clubs, that'd be an amazing achievement for him. But you know, he's got important business to do here, and he'll throw his heart and soul into that until he thinks he's completed his mission.
Mick, I think Francis makes a good point that I don't think Ange would consider going anywhere whilst he still has objectives to complete the Celtic. But it is inevitable, like when Celtic get, you know, a promising player, you know, English Premier League clubs in particular are going to be casting only work in his direction.
Yeah, I think so. But I think you have to have success in Scotland, first of all, because, listen, we've seen Celtic managers in particular who have been extremely successful and not really get a look in England. I mean, Neil Lennon won a shedload of silverware, end up at Bolton, which was even then it was a pretty poison chalice back then as well. I think Brendan Rodgers is slightly different. I think Brendan Rodgers got the job at Leicester because he was Brendan Rodgers, who had been the Liverpool manager. Maybe so. It's a difficult leap to make from Celtic to the English Premier League. The only thing is a lot of jobs come up in that England because it's a bloodbath for managers down south. So there will be positions that come up through the years. And the more people notice that there's something different happening at Celtic, it's not quite the usual run-of-the-mill stuff that's happening in the dugout at Celtic, that might make teams who are a bit more adventurous take notice. But in the short term, it has to deliver at Celtic. There has to be titles, there has to be Champions League. There has to be results in the Champions League, not just turning up and making up the numbers. There has to be results. I think Celtic have been guilty of dropping their ambitions in the last kind of decade in terms of Champions League. I think the target went from being there and being successful at that level to just turning up and maybe hopefully getting there. And now they haven't been there for, what, 3-4 years. So I think getting to the group stage isn't enough. I think they have to compete in the group stage and they have to try and make sure they get to Europe beyond Christmas, either the Champions League or in Europa League. So yeah, there's a big target still to me. I think he's done great so far, but this is very much the start of the journey for Postecoglou at Celtic. There's a lot to do before I think anyone can think about the next step, because Celtic have got to get to be successful first before that comes into play.
Francis, just to finish off today's podcast, you obviously, you know Ange quite a bit. I know I'm putting you in the spot badly here. I know you won't see every game in Scotland, but knowing his drive, his determination, would you back him with a point advantage to go on and win the Premiership title this season?
Yeah, absolutely. He'd relish what's ahead of him. There are all those variables that you can't control, and that's injuries and whatnot, which could change the shape of the title challenge. And that's not only for Celtic, but for Rangers and as well. The outside of those variables, he'll be driving his players to do exactly that. And what he'll be saying to them is, what a wonderful opportunity it is. Look at this opportunity you've created for yourself. And you're halfway there, but you're only halfway there. So, yeah, I think, I know there's a lot of fixtures coming up in the next couple of weeks, which, given the demands on players in this, I think they sort of, the whole COVID period has demanded a lot from footballers all over the world, in ways that we can barely understand in terms of, COVID bubbles and playing without fans and just having to live a different way. So there's a lot of that stuff going on. Of course, you've got the Conference League stuff in the middle of that as well, which is just another level of complexity when it comes to travelling to Europe and playing in some far away, wonderfully exotic places. But, the travel stuff will be really fascinating. And there's all that stuff going in there as well. If you're in a race like this, you're in a marathon and you're halfway through and you're feeling good and you've got your nose with a leading pack, you've got to believe you can win it, can't you? Yeah. And that's the mindset with which you've got to play.
Absolutely.
So, Absolutely. He'll be excited. I've got no doubt he'll be excited. I know Angelo enough to know he believes he'll be able to coach his team to win it. He'll believe he can win it. Don't worry about that.
And Mick, some Celtic fans, and I realise I'm getting woefully carried away here, but some Celtic fans will look towards a treble, perhaps the Scottish Cup coming into it as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, for everyone listening, the wry smile on Mick's face.
On this podcast, I don't know if I'm the voice of doom or the voice of reason. I tend to kind of a bit more devil's advocate. I still think the title race is a lot of twists and turns to come.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone should be writing off Rangers at this point in time either.
No. Could Mick, can I just ask you, do you think it's going to come down to that fixture on the 3rd of April at Dybrox? Could it come down to that second last weekend?
I think it could do, yes. I think it quite possibly could do. But I actually tend to think that titles are decided away from the Old Firm games. I know there's points available in these matches, but I actually think it's not dropping points elsewhere that matters. I think we all get fixated on these games. And listen, I'll be doing the same thing. The hype machine will be cranked up and you fall into that trap. But I think it's the points that they get toward the title are won and lost elsewhere. It's won at Motherwell, at Pittodrie, at Tynecastle. These are the places where the points are won. I think the Old Firm games will be big marker posts, and that one in April could be, that will be extremely interesting. But I'd still think there's points to be dropped elsewhere along the way, from both sides. But Celtic have got a head of steam, they've got momentum, they've got players coming back. I think they're very strong for the running. But I'm not putting any money anywhere just this point in time yet. I think there's still a long way to go. As for trebles, listen, it's there for them, but I think there's a lot of things that can happen, especially cup ties and anything can happen. I mean, red cards and injuries and chaos, who knows. If you can pull a treble off, they're going to start you outside Celtic Park after this season. But a long way to go, I think.
Both you guys have just written off the Conference League completely.
Well, that's another thing. They've got a pretty winnable tie in the Conference, and they're going to Bodø in Norway. Play against them in 2 weeks' time. Winnable tie, then see where that takes them. That, I mean, they could go deep in that competition. They should be aiming to go deep in that competition. So that will be interesting. Going to the Arctic Circle at the end of the month in February. I'd imagine the climate was slightly different to yours, Francis.
Oh, just a bit. Just a bit, Michael.
But we're looking forward to it, but I think I'll leave my flip-flops back here.
It's just such an unknown quantity, the Conference League, because it's its first season. But I do agree that when you watch Celtic the other night, if they can play like that consistently, the sky's the limit. You know, there's not too many big teams in it, but I suppose time will tell. Francis, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast this week. I can't express gratitude enough. Thank you very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, Daniel. And up the boys. Let's have another win on the weekend.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And hopefully we can have you back before the season's out as well. That'd be great.
Love to talk to you. See you, Michael. See you, Daniel.
Actually, we're hoping, Francis, that pre-season training is in Australia next summer. So we can come down and see you around and do the podcast. We could... I could bring my flip flops for that one. Hopefully
you could, and I'll have to buy the sunscreen in oil barrels for you, Michael.
Oh, and Daniel, slap it on.
Actually, as well, I should say it's always a pleasure spending my Monday morning with you. And for everyone listening, we'll be back next week. Thanks very much.